Current State on 90.5 WKAR, also every weekday at noon on AM 870. It was 20 years ago today, February 10th, 1996. Russian Grandmaster Garry Kasparov played the first of six chess games against an IBM supercomputer known as Deep Blue. Kasparov lost Game 1, though he ultimately won the match. A year later, man faced machine again, and this time Deep Blue emerged victorious. That initial game in 1996 marked the first time a computer ever defeated a world chess champion in a classical game of chess. Since then, though, artificial intelligence has logged an even bigger victory, and Current State's Kevin Lavery is here to tell us more. This second feat happened pretty recently, I take it.
Yes, Mark. It was last October, although it really didn't make the headlines until about 2 weeks ago. Google has developed a program called AlphaGo, which has defeated a champion human Go player. I didn't know what Go was until I did some research. Go is an ancient Chinese game that even predates chess, and it's considered to be much more difficult. So to understand the value of this accomplishment, I sought out an artificial intelligence expert. Dr. Arend Hintze studies AI at Michigan State University. And so we first talked about the Kasparov Deep Blue contest back in 1996.
The chess championship for the first time proved that you can do something that's really way better than what we can do as humans, right? I mean, if you would play Kasparov, you would not assume to win whatsoever, right? So that being sort of the first technological achievement that said we can outcompete humans on this domain, that was awesome. Now, if you compare Go to chess, then Go is many orders of magnitude more complicated to play for a computer. Not necessarily more complicated to play for a human, because we have ways of dealing with this type of complexity. But what these algorithms typically do is they try to test all possible moves, and then all possible counter moves, and then all possible counter moves, and so forth. And what Google did in this approach is they used what's called a deep learning network, which looks at the board and is really trained to evaluate how good the board is. And this deep learned network is now making the decision of this board is better than that board. And secondly, it also helps you to not think overly deep. I mean, they still, I think, go 20 moves into the future. In chess, I think the good computers go somewhere around 8 and 10 moves. And I think humans do around 10 moves. And that's really what this makes this algorithm play so well.
We are highly intelligent. We like to think we are a highly intelligent species, but we are flawed. Are we trying to build artificial intelligence that is not flawed, or is something that really resembles us but better somehow? So I think that's a message from the great beyond. I think we just got our answer.
I can turn that off, sorry. So I think it's not so much about being flawed as actually being a generalist about many things. So it's not so much about being the best possible performer in one field, but being a really good performer in many, many, if not all fields. And I mean, our intelligence is not only good in many fields, we can actually figure out to become better in other situations, right? We can learn, we can adapt, we can change our environment and so forth. And none of these quotation mark expert systems is really in this domain. They're all optimized for one thing and one thing only.
We're talking with Dr. Arend Hintze, who is a professor of integrative biology at Michigan State University. His research passion, though, is artificial intelligence. Computers have algorithms, Arend, but human beings have gut instincts and hunches about what their opponents are going to do. Does that still ultimately make us superior?
Not when it comes to playing chess, I think, or to play Go. In fact, I think in many situations, your emotions make you doubt yourself or you become overconfident and so forth. And at the same time, it is this complexity of our cognitive system that allows us to actually deal with simple interactions. I can tell that you're a friendly guy, right? I'm not scared whatsoever. The computer would not be able to assess that. And also doesn't take it into account in playing chess. You know the scene from Star Wars where they play this game on the computer and then the Wookiee says, I'm going to tear your arm out?
You made a fair move. Screaming about it can't help you.
I don't have it. It's not wise to upset a Wookiee.
But, sir, nobody worries about upsetting a droid.
It's because a droid don't pull people's arms out of their sockets when they lose. Wookiees are known to do that.
I see your point, sir. I suggest a new strategy, R2. Let the Wookiee win.
The computer will just continue playing, right? And risk its life. you in that situation, and this is the beautiful part about Star Wars in this case, they actually anthropomorphize these robots. These robots comprehend the situation, and they understand that they have to let the Wookiee win. The algorithm solution will never be able to do this. Those two computers, or these two robots, have actual human-level intelligence, and they comprehend the situation, and that makes them sort of survive the situation that goes beyond just the pure algorithm solution.
The Star Wars analogy is excellent. Let's go back a decade before that to 2001, A Space Odyssey, a classic sci-fi film, the HAL 9000 that locks astronaut David Bowman out of the spaceship.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
To what degree are those fears of ours that artificial intelligence will supersede us rational? To what degree are they even playing out?
That's a really interesting question, because HAL, the computer in 2001, is what we would typically call a sort of top-down problem solver. You give it lots and lots of rules. And interestingly enough, artificial intelligence research at that time was really about parsing sentences into new sentences that make sense. And HAL is really doing these things and has some kind of, you know, hidden rules. And on top of that, HAL has the secret rule that nobody knows. And also on top of that, it says your mission is more important than the lives of the crew, right? And this causes this conflict. And then he computes, yeah, everybody has to die, right? And this is really where our striking fear comes from. And I think if we sit down and would try to write a computer program like HAL, we would actually fall into the exactly same trap. We create systems that are very complex and very unpredictable, and therefore actually are prone to making mistakes, right? I mean, we all know these catastrophe and failure scenarios where we have overly complicated systems and we cannot predict them and then they fail. This is absolutely true for this type of intelligence. If you over-engineer it and you put too many rules in it, well, then you might very well get a HAL 9000.
But let's go back to HAL for a second. When Dave Bowman finally does get back into the spaceship, he realizes he has to shut HAL down. And as he's doing it, HAL says,
I'm afraid. I'm afraid, Dave.
This is not a calculating, objective computer that simply thinks the mission is paramount. This is an organism, a cybernetic organism, if you will, that is expressing fear.
The funny thing is, I think HAL is trying to manipulate Dave in that situation, because before that, he says this hilarious line that says, Dave, you're excited, you should take a stress pill. Completely misunderstanding the solution, the situation at hand, right? It's like, you're excited, you should take a stress pill. This is a pure computational output, right? And then, I mean, I think this is a lot of cinematography that goes into this. They actually, you know, make this organism more and more human, that at some point we actually say, wait, Dave is actually destroying a sentient being here. And that puts us in this disposition there. That's why I think it's manipulation of HAL in this case. It's like, oh, okay, I'm about to end my existence. How can I manipulate Dave to not kill me? In the end, he actually sings the song and like tries to push all the buttons. He's out of options, literally.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to.
Where is AI going beyond entertainment and amusement?
When we talk about human-level type of intelligence, and what we probably want to do at some point is we want to build androids or robots that have human-level cognitive abilities. Well, first of all, we get in a very interesting ethical situation, because suddenly we have sentient beings for all we care. How do we treat them, right? And, I mean, we cannot just say, oh, yeah, tie my shoes, do this, do that, right? We have to probably get to some point of synergistic agreement between each other. And at the same time, we pretty much create little or maybe large copies of ourselves that to a certain degree are immortal, right? You can just save their brain. They can go in risky situations. If they lose their quotation mark life in that situation, well, we just, you know, apply the same brain to the next body, right? So that's sort of really the sci-fi outcome. And then they really have all the human capabilities. So in a sense, instead of having like one computer that drives my car and one computer that sorts my media library and one computer that organizes my appointments and whatever, right, I might have one robot that does it all. Because it could drive the car, it could make a call, it could interact with me, it could protect me in a particular situation, or it could also be a discussion partner saying, actually, what you're trying to do there is wrong. Right? Or I could find it and say, hey, you know, do you think I'm wrong here? It's a very interesting level of dialogue, which we currently also have with humans. And at the same time, we can create surrogates of that and have intelligent machines that help us in that aspect. I think this is the ultimate goal that I just set, right? The way there, I don't know how this looks like. And also when we get to this, I mean, I hope we get there in like 50, maybe 100 years. I don't know. A very smart chess computer will not make coffee.
That's a shame. Dr. Adan Hinsa is a professor of integrative biology at Michigan State University. He is also well entrenched in the field of artificial intelligence. We've been talking about the 20th anniversary of the Kasparov versus Deep Blue IBM chess match, and also the recent example of AlphaGo beating one of the world's top Go players. Dr. Hinsa, thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.